Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis from freezing Westchester County. But that's okay, because this is going to be so much fun. Murder, Mayhem, and Crawling with Wild Animals. You know, this book came in time for the in memory of Betty White, who would love this book because it advocates why you need to be careful and take care of animals. And I think that's fantastic. So when animals start mysteriously disappearing from the Penwell Wildlife Refuge, former English teacher, right my field, turned Wildlife Magazine reporter Christy Farrell is on the case. Days later, the body of the refugee's director is found in a grassy clearing, and with her veterinary daughter, Abby, I got it right, investigation discovers strong motives among the suspects, including greed, infidelity, revenge, and blackmail, and don't you dare hurt those animals. So good morning, Lois Schmidt is here, and the title of the song of the book is Playing Possum and Don't Mess with These People. So how are you, and welcome to MJ Network.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Me too. So tell me, how does Christy decide as a writer that she was going to take on finding out who was stealing the animals? Tell us a little bit about this book.
Okay. Well, she is a writer for a magazine called Animal Advocate. So they do stories involving animals. That's all the magazine covers. So when animals started disappearing from the rehabilitation center at this preserve, her editor, the staff, they decided she should do an article on that. So that's how she first got involved in it.
Yes, yeah, she's really good. So how come she included her daughter? Why does her daughter become part of the investigation?
Her daughter, Abby, is a veterinarian. So she has a lot of knowledge about animals, which is helpful, and she also has a lot of contacts in the animal field. So she knows other vets. She knows people who deal with animals. So there's a lot of, if Christy needs information, there's a lot of sources available through Abby.
So I have this right on Facebook. I'm telling people to listen, and I'm putting the number on there. So who is Melissa? And what is her role? Poor Melissa.
Melissa is the director of this wildlife refuge. And as director, she handles staff and the day-to-day operations.
So that's her job, right? Exactly.
Right.
So how does she, what about Victoria? How does she get involved in this? I wasn't crazy about this lady. And what is her first impression of Victoria?
Okay. Victoria is the chairperson of the Board of Trustees of this preserve. Preserve, of course, is a refuge. The refuge, of course, is a not-for-profit. They have a Board of Trustees. It's called the Penwell Wildlife Preserve or Refuge.
Mm.
And that's because her late husband donated the land. So that's one of the reasons she's chair of the board of directors or the board of trustees. She is a very rich woman, a very powerful woman, and she knows it.
And she uses it.
Absolutely.
I wish I could do the same thing. Yep. Sometimes you have to have like an edge or something that nobody knows about. So who is Elena? And what does Christy overhear between her and Melissa? And who's Austin?
Okay. Elena is the education coordinator at the refuge. And she's also, this is a little twist, the fiance of Austin Penwell, who is Victoria's son. And ever since she became the fiance, there's been a push to make her director. So Elena constantly, and Victoria undercuts Melissa on things she wants to do. And there's a lot of friction between the two. And they have a heated argument that Christy overhears. She doesn't know what it's about, but they are raising their voices. They are yelling. And Melissa does make a statement, "You'll do that over my dead body."
And she accommodates her. That's so rude. So what is Elena,
well,
you know, Elena needs, you know, the clipboard that I used to do. When my nieces tell me that they're dating someone, I do what my sister did to me. She take out the clipboard test for questions and see if the guy passes. If he doesn't pass, you send him on his way. This is a true story,
well,
for real.
Case, that makes sense, but in this case, it meets the criteria that Elena wants.
Yeah.
And the criteria is Elena, who comes from a middle-class family. You know, she doesn't have power. She wants power. And she wants to advance in her career. And all this can happen. She's going to have wealth and power when she marries into the Penwell family. So that was her attraction. So in that way, now he meets the criteria, which on her list is probably money, power, prestige.
You see, that's funny because I know just the opposite. I was going out with someone along when I was younger, and I wasn't rich enough. My father was. My father had a lot of money. I didn't even know it. And obviously, the mother of this guy felt that I wasn't rich enough. So I said, "Whatever." He married a girl that whose father paid him $9 million to marry her, and what can I say? So how does she manage to manipulate people, Elena? She manages to get people to do what she wants.
She does. She's well. First of all, now that she's engaged to Austin Penwell, she can use that to get what she wants. She can almost bully her way. At the preserve, the Victoria Penwell, her future mother-in-law, is chair, and she lets everyone know who she is. So that's one of the ways, you know, she does it. And she's good at marketing herself, at PR. We all know people like that who, you know, somebody else does all the work and they do a great job, but somebody else takes credit because they're just good at getting it out there.
That's not right, though. So
no, it's not.
George is interesting. Who is George, and why does we realize that he might be in trouble? And why does Elena complain about him? She's not very nice.
No, she's not. But George is the wildlife rehabilitator, and I'll just explain briefly what that is. Wildlife, particularly nowadays, gets injured many times. It's because of human things. A duck may get caught in fishing wire. You know, birds have flown into telephone poles. Things happen. Animals get hit by cars. So a lot of it is human fault. Some of it is just natural. Squirrel falls out of a tree. But a lot is human. But anyway, there are wildlife rehabilitators. They're licensed in New York. They're licensed by the state of New York. And they can work and see and work on and aid these injured animals. If they need an operation, the animal is taken to the vet, but the rehabilitator then provides the aftercare. But very often things, simple like putting a leg in a splint, a fox's leg in a splint, they can do themselves. So that's George. That's his job. He is the wildlife rehabilitator at this refuge. And we know there's some problems going on because certain physical things are happening. He stumbles. Once he spills some of the food, just he's acting a little clumsy. He's also taking off time from work. And as
I'm
for
wondering,
Elena,
I wonder if they have these rehabilitators at the zoo or at a veterinarian or somebody that actually does that.
At the zoo, they usually have licensed, they have veterinarians. They have the veterinarians there doing it, you know, at zoo. This is really animals in the wild that are injured. Because these rehabilitators are also trained on how to transport them, you know, how to take an injured animal and get them to the rehabilitation center so they can fix them. And then the goal is to they release them in the wild. They release
them. I wonder how many of the animals would like to stay there. I wonder how many of them would like to look at them and go like, don't let me go, let me stay.
I don't know. I think a lot of the animals that live in a preserve or a natural place like that are fine there. They do have their freedom. And the goal is to, you know, release them. At this preserve, they even had the rehabilitation. They even had a frog there that they had to fix the leg because it was partially chopped off by a weed whacker, by an unsuspecting human who wasn't careful and was just doing gardening and didn't know. Luckily, he had the sense to call the center and get the rehabilitator. Sometimes, and I'll just add this, sometimes the animals can't be released back if they're injured to the extent that even though they're fixed and they can live, they can't function in the wild. Then they often have to stay. Sometimes they use them for educational resources. For instance, in this case, there's an owl that can't fly anymore. So he stays there, and he's used for educational programs in schools and things like that. Sometimes they send them off to sanctuaries where they can live in a different type of condition, a more controlled condition. But that's only for animals that can't survive in the wild.
It's so sad that with this pandemic that the kids can't go there. It's so sad. I know that some of them go to the aquariums and stuff because it's fun, but they're losing out on so many trips because of this. It's so sad.
They are. They're on those school trips. It is sad,
The whole school system is sad, and I'm listening to the governor up here who's not too plugged in on the right circuit. And she's thinking, along with the governor of New Jersey, of lifting the mask thing in schools and outside. And I don't think that's such a hot idea. I hate wearing a mask, but it still prevents you from a lot of things. So what does Christy learn when she's interviewing both Elena and George? And then what happens to poor Melissa? Oh, poor Melissa.
Well, we all know, it's really no spoiler alert, Melissa is found dead, and obviously it's murder, and when Christy interviews the other staff there, especially Melissa and especially Elena and George, she learns that there's a lot of tension at this preserve. It's not all one happy family where everybody is working together.
Yeah.
There's a lot of backbiting. And
I know there's a lot,
with the
a lot of backstabbing here.
Yep, comes some motive for murder.
It's always good. Now we have more suspects. We have George, Jeremy, Victoria, and Elena. So who is Jeremy? Because we know
Jeremy,
the other three.
Jeremy is the only one that doesn't work at the reserve. He is Melissa's ex-boyfriend.
Ooh.
And he runs a food truck.
Well, that's interesting. So what does she learn? She meets Melissa's parents, and what conclusions does she draw from them?
Well, that also is interesting. Melissa's parents are very old-fashioned, very strict. She goes in their home, and it's something out of it screams 1950s. But they're very strict, particularly the father. So the first time she goes, she doesn't learn too much, but she learns one thing. She learned that Melissa came into money. Parents don't know how, but she was buying things. She bought some big appliances for her parents. She was spending money. All of a sudden, she'd come into money. So that's one of the things that she learned. Also, she goes back again, and she talks to the mother. The father's not there. And she finds out, without saying why, she finds out a little more, because the mother reveals a little more when the father isn't there.
That's interesting. Her mother reminded me of mine. Sorry. Very strict, very prim and proper, everything. So
I think it reminds a lot of people of our generation, of our parents.
My mother was like that up until whatever. I think everyone in my family, no matter how old, my sister was like that before she died, exactly like my mother. My brother's like that now, too.
There are a lot of people.
Yeah, I try to teach that to my nieces and nephews, and most of it rubs off. And my niece was in a bad relationship like this one, and like Austin, and I fixed it. Explained to her why, if you want a career in music, you need to be on your own. So this was interesting. Tell us why she becomes involved with puppy mills and the missing animals taken from the wildlife refuge. What are puppy mills? And I know there's such a thing, because I looked it up.
Right. Puppy mills are basically breeders on steroids, okay? They're places where animals are bred, dogs are bred to sell. And unlike a legitimate breeder who takes very good care of their dogs and only breeds sporadically, when it's appropriate. They give them lots of time to rest. The dogs are free. They go for, the puppy mill just turns them out. These dogs, these parents' dogs, it's horrible.
These dogs
live in cages their entire life. They don't get out. And they just breed them. They have a litter. Well, they're going to have another litter right after that. That's all they're there for. And when they can't breed anymore, they're usually killed. This is the puppy mill. The puppies often have health problems. The puppies often have health problems. They are in check for genetic diseases. The parents, a legitimate breeder will check to make sure the dogs that are breeding are physically healthy and there's not going to be genetic problems. Not with the puppy mill dogs. They're just bred, and they often come out with all sorts of problems, heart problems, problems with their physical structure. They're often kept, and since they're kept in such horrible condition, many of them have things like kennel cough and respiratory problems.
Oh, God.
So they're horrid. Again, Christy works for Wildlife, a magazine that focuses on animals. So she actually came up with the idea for this story when talking to her husband, who is a vet, and her daughter, who is a vet, and they were talking about some of the cases that they've seen, which involve puppy mill dogs and how the puppies from them have so many problems. So that's how she.
Well, how do people get conned into taking them?
Because
they must realize that these puppies are not normal.
No, they don't realize it. They go to a pet
store.
And they think, and the puppy's cute. Who doesn't look at a puppy and think it's cute? And often these places lie. Sometimes one of these dogs will be okay, but many times they have these problems. And they'll say, that's a little kennel cough. That'll be gone in a few days. Or sometimes they'll take the dog home, and then they'll take it to the vet, and, like a week later or so for a checkup, and they'll find, the dog has a genetic heart problem. Well, you've had the dog for a week. Now you're attached to it. It's not like a car that you're going to return.
Yeah, I know.
So they're attached to it. So this is what happens. But most people are good. They don't realize that getting a dog from a pet store usually is a puppy mill dog. If you want a dog, you really need to go either to wonderful. There are lots of dogs you can get at the pound that really need a home. Mixed breeds are great. But if you do want a specific breed, you can go to a legitimate breeder or even a rescue organization. But you want a puppy, you want a golden retriever puppy, go to a legitimate breeder. Check them out. But make sure a legitimate breeder, you can go and see. They'll have the mother dog on the premise. You can see the dog and with its puppy. It's different. The puppy mills, they have dozens, maybe sometimes hundreds of dogs that are just breeding out in cages.
Oh, gosh.
But you go to a pet store, you often don't know. So you have to be careful.
I know. I bought a long time ago. I didn't get dogs. I didn't want one of those. But I had fish and sharks. Mm-hmm. I love sharks. Sharks are so cool. And grammys and angelfish. And you got to be careful when you're going for an angelfish because they're very delicate and they don't last. And the white angels don't last at all. And I was really good at this. It was exciting. When I came home from school, my shark would jump up and tell me, hi, I'm there. It grew so big. We had a 25-thing tank. Yeah, and the thing was huge until, the poor sharks. So there's a pet store. And my brother has a rescue dog. Bella is so cute, though. She's you don't mess with Bella. But tell us about her visit to the pet store and the owner. And why does she take the job there? She's really smart, let me tell you.
Well, she wants to... an investigative reporter, so she's doing the story. So she goes there, she talks to some of the staff there, including a young boy, about 19, that age, who works there basically doing sweeping up, putting out the food, things like that. He's a little bit slow, and she talks to him, but he's the only one there that really seems to care for the animals. And she talks to him, and she finds out things from him. And she decides the best way to get her story is to apply for a job. There happens to be an opening because one of the salespeople is moving. So she applies, she gets the job, and it puts her in a spot where she can see what's really going on behind the scenes.
And it is the only way. So how does this lead to uncovering what happens to the animals? And this owner, he lies a lot. And people don't, they don't know better. So if you're not an animal lover or a vet or somebody like that, or know somebody that's a vet that can actually see it, and they don't do what they do sometimes with other things, they don't let you take the pet home and then give it back if you don't want it. So once it's yours, it's yours, pretty much.
Exactly. So what the psychology of it is most people, once they get a pet, even if it has physical problems, they become attached very quickly, and it's very hard to return it. Again, it's not like a car or, a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
So it is very hard to return. But what she does is while working there, she overhears conversation. I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give away.
No, don't tell anybody.
A lot of the plot.
I have hands out for this book, by the way.
Thank you. So she overhears conversation that leads her further on in her investigation. That's what I'll say on that.
Okay, we're not going to tell them. But, the purpose of the wildlife refuge is to save animals, and you begin to wonder. So who is Susan Hansen, and what is her role, and why is she on the Board of Trustees?
Okay. First of all, I just want to talk a little bit about the refuge and tell you that, as you know, most places, particularly in New York, where you live up in Westchester, I live on Long Island, land is constantly being developed for homes, condos, shopping centers, and that's the animal's home. So there are refuges that have been established where the land can't be developed and the animals that live there can continue to live. New ones are constantly being born. So it's a haven for them. And we have several on Long Island. And I think you do too in Westchester. I'm not sure, but you probably do. But we do on Long Island. And in fact, one of them is where I did a lot of research. Okay, it's a non-for-profit, and there's a board of trustees who runs it. On this particular board of trustees, Victoria Pendwell is the chair, and most of the other members are close cronies of hers, family friends. They're titans of industry. They also come from money, but they had very little background with animals. She needed somebody on the board that knew something about animals, particularly wildlife. Susan Hansen is a science teacher, and she's written papers. She has a background in ornithology, and she's a scientist. She has a lot of background in this. So she is the one they put on to give some professional prestige to the board. In reality, they never listen to her. She's just there for her name and credentials.
That's not good. Now let's get to the good part, people. The guy that needs Fran's clipboard, seriously. So we've got Austin. He might present one side of him and then another to the others. So how does his mother control him? And how does being engaged to him let Elena think that she's going to bring specific programs to the Wildlife Refuge Center? That's interesting part of this plot.
Yes. Well, Austin is Victoria's son, and Victoria is just a very powerful, domineering mother. And Austin is going to run for state senate, which basically she wants more than he does. But she's pushing him. In terms of Elena, there's one quality about Elena. Elena actually is interested in the environment and wildlife. That is a passion with her. Despite all the bad qualities, she is interested. And she wants to forge a career in this field. And Austin can help her do it. Being married to a Pendwell can help her do it. It opens all sorts of doors. I mean, just
well, sometimes
you've
got to do it, yeah. You know something, in this world, unfortunately, you do need somebody to let you get you in the front door, unfortunately.
Right. And unfortunately, you're right. But this is what happens with Elena. This is how she sees it.
I don't blame her. What can I say? So we have George. I'm so sad he's dead. Oh, well. So who is Cassie? And she takes over his job. And why and how did you create the scene with the scorpion? Oh, my God, that scared me. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let me do Cassie first. Cassie is the part-time rehabilitator for the refuge. And that's because they have to have somebody, you know, if an animal's injured and it's George's day off, well, you either have to call him in or, you know, you can't wait till Monday or Wednesday or whenever he's coming back. You know, nobody's going to work 7 days a week, 24 hours. So there's a part-timer who helps, who is on call when he's not available, and that was Cassie. So when George can no longer do it, Cassie becomes the rehabilitator there. So as for the scorpion, okay, there is somebody who wants to kill another person at the refuge.
Yeah, not nice.
Somebody they think may have a clue to their identity. It's the killer of Melissa. Is afraid that somebody else may know too much. And this person wants to kill somebody else. I'm not going to say who, but they want to kill somebody else. So the scorpion, now, you may say, well, you know, a scorpion for most people, if you're not a baby or, you know, 95 years old and in poor health, a scorpion bite is not going to kill you. No, for most
people. I don't want to find out.
But for the type of scorpion that I use, again, research this, it's called the Arizona box scorpion. It is extremely venomous, and its bite is lethal. It's not treated in time, so it is lethal. So it's one of the few breeds that can kill.
Okay, now we have another part of this that gets interesting. We have a rival Senate. We have Senate candidates. So why does Christie go to meet the rival Senate candidates? And what else do we learn about Austin? I didn't like him at all. Sorry.
Yeah, there are a lot of characters here that you love to hate. I will say that.
Yeah.
She goes there because she wants to find out more about Austin.
Yeah.
Because he becomes a suspect, too, later on.
Yeah, I know.
And, of course, so she goes there to find out. And as she says, if I go to his Senate campaign office, they're only going to say good things about him. I go to the opponents, they're going to say bad things. They're going to have the dirt. Some of it, as we all know, with politics, maybe just mudslinging. But some of that mud does stick. There might be some truth into it. At least she'll get an idea of where to investigate. And Christie is a good investigative reporter. She doesn't take things at face value. She checks them out to make sure what she hears is true.
Yeah, we have some other part here. I'm looking. I've got a ton of questions. Oh, my goodness. Look at this. Tell us about this. You brought in another part. The ring, Abby's ring. So why did you bring back, and how does she intend to get the real one back? That was interesting,
okay,
too.
That's a little side story. There's always a little side story in it, a human story. Now, I worked for many years as media spokesman for a consumer affairs agency. So I have a consumer background. So I try in my stories to always bring a little side story, something with that, because those cases are interesting. They are, and they humanize everybody. This was a common scam. I don't want to go into it too much because I don't want to give away too much, but it was a common scam when I worked for consumer affairs. And so I have that as a little side story. And the sad thing is, getting in cases like this, getting the ring back may or may not happen. If the ring has already been sold or the stone taken out, then it's usually too late. But in some cases, nothing has been done yet, and it's able to be returned. So again, I do try in all my stories, little side story that has a consumer theme to it.
I wish they would have found the ring that I lost at Urgent Care a couple of weeks ago. I dropped a ring, and I called 5 minutes later, and they said it was missing. And I have a feeling I know who took it. It was something my father bought me when I graduated college at 17. Seriously.
Oh no, that's terrible.
Yeah, so
that's
I finally
terrible.
Had another one made, but it's not the same. But before I forget,
did you go back there? Did you go back again?
Yeah, I did, actually. It was right outside, and I went back, and they said that they couldn't find it. I think the person that was running the place that's no longer there took it. And because how does it fall on the floor and nobody saw it? It was, like, weird, So I got really upset.
Yeah.
So before I forget, Thursday, Stella Tearheart will be here with a true story about the Holocaust and what happened to her family. It is heartbreaking, but a really phenomenal book. On the 15th, John Land took over the murder in the CDC, the Margaret Truman Capital Murders. On the 17th, Cindy McDonald. And right after that, my niece Carly is going to drop her song, Where You At? It's coming out on the 17th on MJ Network in memory of her grandmother. On the 21st, we have Fool Her Once. On the 23rd, I am so excited, New York Times author John Gilstrap will be here with Blue Fire. What happens when you don't have phones and refrigerators and electricity? And what do you do when you live in an environment right after an apocalypse? This is fantastic. 28th, New York Times author Claire Douglas will be here with Just Like Us Girls. And what better way to start March than with Philip Margolin, The Darkest Place, and Andrea Kane and Annie Kors. Yeah, that's just to start. I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, it's my amazing,
I like
and
Philip
I have
Margolin.
Philip Margolin is like a friend. I love him. I can email him myself. That's how, and when I send questions, I don't send it to the publicist. I send it to Phil myself. He's great, and he's a great person.
I love his
book.
I love his book.
Wait till you read The Darkest Place and tell me what you think about the third scene in the courtroom. That's all I will tell you. You're going to need tissues for this one. So why does Cassie work there, and what does she learn that shocks her?
Okay, I don't want to give too much there.
Don't give away,
But I will tell you one thing. Since George had been sick, she discovered that some of the animals were not getting the right care.
Mm.
And that has a lot to do with his illness. He wasn't doing it deliberate. He wasn't lazy, but it just happened because of things. And she was worried about some of them. That's all I'm going to say on that.
That's so sad. Where did you find out who stole the animals? That was even shockier. So now we have someone that I really like to slap in the head. Why doesn't Detective Wolf want to want to investigate the two murders and investigate Veronica and the center money?
Well, Wolf, first of all, is Christie's nemesis.
Yep,
he is. He was always a bully. He went to school with Christie's younger brother and used to bully him. He got on the police force because he has a relative who's high up.
Oh, God.
He's still a bully. He's also lazy. He wants the simplest answer. He's not going to check things out. And in this case, he doesn't want to rattle the Penwells. They're powerful. They're rich. He doesn't want them as his enemy. He's not going to check it out. The easiest one to go for is Jeremy, the boyfriend.
Mm.
You know, it's the young man who owns a food truck. So he's satisfied. He's not going to investigate. Wolf is a character in all my books with Christie. As you know, I had two before this, Monkey Business, which takes place at a zoo, and Something Fishy, which takes place in an aquarium. And Wolf is a homicide detective. So he's always there, and Christie always bursts his bubble.
So we have Sheila. How does she get involved, and what does she help with?
Okay. Sheila is the Penwell's maid.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she is there every day. She sees what goes on. She knows the inner workings of the family, what they talk about, what they do, because most people don't pay attention to the maid. They're not aware that they're even in the room sometimes. So she hears their fights, their arguments. You know, they're not going to talk about something illegal in front of her, but she gets to know the personality, what they're fighting about, what they want to do, and so forth. She also happens to have a dog that is a patient of Abby's, because Abby's a vet. So they get to talk to Sheila. Abby is able to ask her questions, bring Christie in, and they can find out a lot about what's going on with the Penwells.
Well, my niece is a vet. She works for, on the island, and I'm so proud of her because she's in a veterinary assistant. Not only that, I think she's got more pets in her house than she has poor Alexandria, who's three. She's got dogs and gerbils and iguanas. She's got everything, and fish.
That often happens with pets. They do.
Yeah. She's got tons of animals, and she takes great care. And the little girl, she's three, my niece, and she loves them. So this really got me. Elena's programs, why does Elena's programs get credit? Who created them, and who steals her ideas?
Well, a lot of the ideas actually came from Victoria. But
yeah,
again,
she's
Elena
a real witch, that lady.
At marketing, she is, but, you know, some of the ideas weren't bad. And Elena's good at marketing, so she throws them out. And, again, she's going to be Victoria's daughter-in-law. Victoria wants to push her in her career. So Victoria, for this matter, doesn't really care that certain ideas, like the owl prowl, came from her. She'll let Elena take credit for it.
Mm. That was nice of her. So she interviews a whole lot of people, but we find out, what extra money did Melissa get? Where did it come from?
Okay. Can't really tell you where it came from, but this is the important crux of it, because when they find out that, when Christy finds out that Melissa came into this money, she thinks this could be a motive for murder. Was Melissa blackmailing somebody?
Yeah.
Where did this money come from? So that leads her in one direction in her investigation. I'm not going to tell you whether it's turned out to be true or not, but the money is something that until close to the end, they don't discover where it came from.
Hmm. So we have two more characters. Who is Linda Lau and who is Erin, and why does she want to talk to them?
Okay. Linda Lau comes to see Christy. In my first book, Monkey Business, I have a character called Mia Lau. She's a former student of Christy when Christy was an English teacher. And she's now working, interning at the zoo where Christy is doing a story. And they talk and they meet. And, well, in the end, Mia dies. Mia gets killed. And Christy solves the murder. So Linda is Mia's cousin, and she knew that how Christy helped with Mia's case, and Linda happens to be a good friend of Melissa. So she asked Christy if she will help solve the murder of Melissa, and Christy, of course, had planned to do that anyway, probably, because she's a reporter. She's working on the wildlife refuge as a story, and this is part of the story. But Christy is also a very human-type person. She really feels for people. And when Linda asks her, she says, definitely, she will help. And she also doesn't particularly like Wolf and thinks he's incompetent and that he's possibly railroading. Again, could be Jeremy, it might not be Jeremy, but she doesn't think he's getting a fast check, and she's going to check it out.
There are very few people that would do that. Very few people. And I'm finding that, you know, I deal with the media all the time because a lot of them are authors in their book, and they're cool. And we talked about that on my last show, my last panel. How does the media create the hype, and how come sometimes they take these events and twist them to make people get upset or just get public opinion, and every news station tells it differently. So that bothers me too. So how does she finally, without giving it away, how does she piece it all together and realize that this is what this is who did it? And I like Officer Fox. Why does he help her?
Okay. Just one thing you had asked me, I didn't answer on Erin. Erin is a good friend of Melissa, and to make her investigation thorough, she wants to question Erin on Melissa. Maybe she knows things about Melissa's life. Maybe she knows where the money came from.
Mm.
So that's Erin. Okay. In terms to Officer Fox, we'll do that first. Officer Fox is Wolf's partner. I gave them the name in my first book, Monkey Business, because all my books take place in animal settings. Again, Monkey Business is a zoo. This is a wildlife preserve. So I thought, and Wolf and Fox, if you go in the, well, they don't have a phone book anymore, but if you look up, they're very common surnames. Lots of people have those. In fact, I know somebody whose last name is Fox. And there's a dentist here who's Wolf. So they're common names. So I thought it would be sort of fun, and also in making characters easy to remember, if I make the detectives Wolf and Fox. So anyway, Fox is Wolf's partner, and he's a decent guy. He's smart, and he wants to do the right thing. But Wolf is the senior partner. And Wolf is connected to the top brass, so there's not much Fox can do. But he's frustrated, and you can see this frustrating builds up. So finally, in this book, the third in the series, he's had enough, and he meets Christy privately, and he says he will help. Can't do it in front of Wolf, but he will help. And that's how it's evolved.
How did you create the final scenes when we find out who did it without telling?
Okay.
Because that's a
okay.
hard thing for an author to do.
It is. Well, she goes... It's all information. I love puzzles. I've always loved puzzles. And puzzles are putting pieces together. And the information is thrown in throughout the book, little bits here. But it's when Christy goes towards the end on an owl prowl, the owl prowl that I talked about earlier. That's simply something a lot of preserves and refuges have these, where it's a tour at night through the woods. So you get to see what the nocturnal forest, what it's like, the sounds, the smells, what it's like at night. And she goes on this. And while there, some of the information she's had before and some of it within the next few days, she pieces together and she checks out some of the facts and finds out what, you know, everything seems to fall together. And what she does is at this point she knows who it is, and now she has to get to having this person admit it.
Well, she's got to do it without getting killed, too.
Yes, yes.
That's the other thing.
Yes.
Which is you don't want her to get killed. Okay, I did that.
No,
I banged your shoulder. So creating the final scenes is hard, but when you reveal the person, how does, without saying who did it, how does that create a difference in the wildlife preserve then? So the wildlife preserve is going to continue, right? They're not going out.
Because
so who's
basically, it's a trust. And now, well, without saying it, there is mechanism for it to run. There is an internal mechanism that these things, that places like preserves, regardless of what happens to anyone associated with, the preserve will still stand and will still function. There's legal mechanisms for that.
I don't think enough people know about these places. And I don't think enough people realize, maybe somebody should need to write out a book or write a book or something about how to properly buy a pet and make sure you get the right one. No, seriously. I mean,
how to buy
I went to what do you look for when you go into a pet store to buy a book, to get a pet? Then maybe they need to do something about it.
Most of the legitimate pet stores, the big chains like PetSmart, at least here on Long Island, that I think it's true.
Well, the one over here went out.
Petco. Okay. They don't sell dogs or cats. What they are doing now is they are working, the one bunny is what works with rescue organizations. They work with shelters, and they have dogs for adoption because they've shown that they make the money on the collateral things, on the products. You get a rescue dog. You go in there and you take a dog that's being on this, that they have now on Saturday.
Yeah.
Let's say from Saturday 1 to 4, they have dogs from the local shelter. You take one of those dogs. Well, you're going to need a bowl and a leash and toys and bedding, and you're going to need food, and you're going to need food on a regular basis, and you're going to get it there. So they make their money on that, and these legitimate pet stores don't sell dogs and cats anymore. The big ones. There are some smaller ones that do, and they're the ones you have to watch out for. And I know the ASPCA has been very active in trying to stop the puppy mills and stop the sale of puppy mill dogs. And they monitor stores and things. So they try and get the word out, but with everything, there's so much news out there that some of it goes by the wayside. It is hard to get it out to everybody. And unfortunately, many very well-meaning people, people who love animals, don't realize it. They go to one of the smaller pet stores, the independent, who are selling dogs and cats, and they see these adorable little puppies, and they buy one. And they know nothing about where they come from. And if they stop the sale, if these dogs don't sell, they, the puppy mills have no reason to exist. If they can't sell their puppies, they're a business. They're not going to do it anymore.
Well, they have us. The new store just opened across the street from my house. It's not a pet, it's an aquarium for fish only.
Right.
Since I might actually walk in there just one day. I don't want a fish, but to see, well, I would know if they were good or bad. That I would definitely know. I think the thing that broke my heart the most, and I wouldn't do it, is I had sharks and gouramis and angelfish, and I wouldn't give them the goldfish to eat. I put fish food and crickets and stuff.
Yeah.
I couldn't in my heart. The goldfish is so cute. I said, nobody's eating my little guys. And I named them. So I couldn't.
I know exactly what you mean.
I couldn't do it. It's so sad. I know. So how do you create, what do you see Christy next? What's next for her?
Well, actually, I'm working on my fourth book in the series.
Oh, good.
It's called, I've already given it a title. It's called Barely Evidence, B-E-A-R-L-Y, a little play on the word, Barely Evidence. And it takes place at a sanctuary, a wildlife sanctuary.
Oh,
okay,
nice.
Which is different than a refuge. The sanctuary is where animals that can't go in the wild, either they were injured, as I mentioned, too badly, and they can't be released back. They go to sanctuaries. Rescue animals that are rescued from roadside zoos, from circuses, from places like that, go to sanctuaries. A petting zoo, for instance, is going to close. They sell those cute little goats and sheep to slaughterhouses unless somebody can rescue them and get them to the sanctuary. So there are sanctuaries. People also have pets that they shouldn't have. They get wildlife, a number of wolves. People think, oh, a wolf is cute. I'll have it as a pet. Well, after it grows up, a lot of them don't want it as a pet anymore. It's a wild animal. It shouldn't be a pet. So that's where a sanctuary would take it. Dancing bears from a circus, things like this. So this is my next story, places Christy at a wildlife sanctuary. That's where she's doing her story. I'm just starting on it now, so I haven't really figured out the entire plot, but that's the basic place where it will start. And, of course, there will be a murder or two.
One of these days I may give you an idea of who you can kill off. What can I tell you? So where can everybody get all of your books and start from the beginning? The only one I didn't read was the first one, but I did read the second and the third. So I expect to get the fourth when it comes out. That's just a hint.
Thank you. You will.
I haven't been saying that to too many people lately because what can I say? At least it's Christy and it's different. It's not just the same plot with the same character, which is what I read yesterday. I'm like, help me, root canal. But I don't write negative reviews.
No, I have different settings. There are a couple of, characters. It's going to be Christy and her daughter Abby. And
I like Abby.
Wolf. But otherwise, they're going to be different characters, different settings, different characters. Different motives for murder. So,
nice.
It will be different. Yeah. Oh, there's always different motives. So, you can get the book on Amazon or CNN.com. They both have it. Some bookstores have it, but it depends. In most cases, I'd say probably the best bet would be go online to Amazon or CNN.com.
Yeah.
And, you can learn about my book a little bit more. I have a website, which is very simple. It's my name, loisschmidt.com. That's LOISSCHMITT. There is no D in my name. It's TT, loisschmidt.com. And my Facebook is Lois Schmidt, Lois Schmidt author. So that tells you a little more. I do have on my website some blogs that people might be interested in. So that's where you can learn more about me. And as I said, Amazon and VNN.com are probably the best places to get my book. You can also get my book from my publisher. You can order it from my publisher, which is Encircle Publications.
Well, I think that this is a great book to teach anybody that wants to be a vet, wants to understand how important it is people to save the animals. I mean, I get upset in the street if I see somebody, and I've done it before, you know, walking with a dog that doesn't look right. I'll go like, oh, you know, animal prevention, abuse? I don't think so. I mean, it's sad. I think the scariest thing that happened to me 2 years ago was that there was a bat in this apartment, and this bat bit me out of nowhere. They had no idea how it got here. It was like a hole in my closet, and God they got the bat, and the Richie got the bat. It's like, oh, my God, I had to get rabies shots. That hurt, let me tell you. And you don't want to – you got to be – Yeah, I forgot. What happened was he must have been on my keyboard and my computer, so I must have been wet or something, and then the nurse in the hospital said you can't take a chance. So baby shots are painful. I have no choice. They hurt, and plus they have to give you some other glamoglobulin test shot in your butt, and you don't sit for a while. But it was either that either that or you're going to have a problem. I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. But thank you so much. It's a beautiful day outside, I think. Let me see my phone. I have the weather app. Oh, my God, we have a heat wave. It's 37 degrees here. And it's cloudy.
I think it's 41. I think it's 41. So.
Oh, my God, you got more on the island. My sister used to live on the island, too. And I used to go there all the time. I stopped going over the bridge after a while. But it's so beautiful there. But everybody, it's a beautiful day outside. And I hope everybody does an act of kindness for somebody, because this world is so horrible with what's going on. So I said, if everybody does an act of kindness and does the right thing, maybe the virus will realize you're not welcome here anymore. And
that's a wonderful idea. And it makes you feel better when you do an act of kindness, too.
I do. Yeah, I do. And it makes me feel great just to say, I mean, I said good morning to somebody today, and I just said, oh, you look nice. And she looked at me and go like, well, you really do. What can I tell you? So thank you so much. Everybody, have a great day. Lois, stay safe. And bye.
You too. Thank you, Fran. Thank you. Bye-bye.